Welcome to your Found Family podcast, where we don't just have a heart-to-heart, we connect soul to soul. I'm your host, Lizzie, a certified coaching practitioner who found family outside of blood family. In our Found Family, you are accepted and assured that you are not alone. Subscribe and tune in for educational and empowering soul chats with women from all over the world, talking about well-being, personal growth and development, and mental and emotional health. Welcome back to another episode of Found Family. Today, I'm really, really excited. I have a very special guest with me, Kiyomi, who will be soul chatting with me about ROCD. Kiyomi is the founder and creator of Awaken Into Love, an online community for people who experience relationship OCD. With over 500,000 views on YouTube and having worked with over 1,000 plus course community members and clients, she dedicates her life to raising awareness on relationship OCD, anxiety, and relationships. She has experienced debilitating relationship OCD, hypochondria, panic disorder, and general anxiety for years, and used to suffer with every thought, emotion, and feeling possible. Once she overcame ROCD, she knew that she needed to be an expert in this field to help others. After years of extensive research, education, therapy, and coaching, she has become an expert on relationship OCD. Her mission in life is to continue being an relationship OCD advocate and continues to educate people from all around the world on finding freedom from ROCD. So touching, so moving. Kiyomi, welcome. I am so excited to have you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
This is a topic that's very close to me personally. I'm still really struggling with ROCD, and even just, I'm actually kind of surprised at how like my body is reacting right now. I'm like getting choked up because this is something that is really challenging for me to talk about. But I know that a lot of our listeners are currently suffering from ROCD as well. And so I look forward to this conversation and to be able to share our experiences and help to answer people's questions. So when did you first learn that you had ROCD?
Yeah. So this is kind of way back when, so I'm going to have to just think for a second. Because I would say that when I was struggling with ROCD, I had no idea what was going on, right? I think that a lot of listeners would probably agree with the same. It's kind of like, okay, well, is this something about my relationship? It doesn't mean that it's wrong. Maybe I just need to be my partner, you know, and all of these types of obsessive thoughts. But an individual doesn't typically think, oh, I have obsessive compulsive behavior. Like maybe this is something that I should, you know, look into as a diagnosis or something like that. So I would say that I struggled a while with just feeling as though there was something wrong with my relationship. And it was just kind of that like underlying anxiety that I was constantly having until it got to a point where I had like a breaking point, where you're holding in so much anxiety for such a long time and you're obsessing for such a long time that, you know, it gets to a point where you're like, okay, you might probably have a breakdown. And in that breakdown moment, I just like mainly everyone else started Googling and trying to figure out, you know, like obsessions, okay, don't love my partner, with anxiety, and like would try to Google anything possible. And back then, I'm like acting like I'm like 50 years old as me, but like really, like even like 10 years ago, there was not that much information, as there's not that much information right now on ROCD. So there were like about two like scientific journals that popped up, and like something at the OCD LA website about ROCD. And in that moment, it was the feeling of, oh my God, you know, I can put a label onto what I'm experiencing, and I don't feel alone, and there's a name for it. And we always hear that with people who stumble upon ROCD, feeling love, like, oh my God, there is a name for this, right? Like there's kind of that feeling of like freedom, or that feeling of like, you know, like I actually can put my finger on a name for what I'm going through. It doesn't have to do with my relationship. So I would say that it was definitely through that Googling process where I stumbled upon those articles, but it was such a process, and it, you know, the whole journey has been such a process with ROCD. But that's kind of when I started to find out, okay, this is what I'm going through. I am going through obsessions. I'm going through compulsions. Okay, educating myself on it then, and then trying to find as much information on it as possible.
That's really powerful, because I think that word, like labeling, there's so much power in that word, because on one hand, and this is totally like a mindset, where if someone looks at that word labeling as being imprisoned, being put in a box, being, you know, told like there's only one way to be or one way to do things, then it could be almost more debilitating, because it does make you feel like, oh my God, I'm labeling something and it's not a good thing. But when we are able to find out the names for things, there is a sense of relief. Like even again, just observing my own body right now, just putting that thought into my head and really being present with this idea of like, yeah, when I also found out that there was a name to it, it didn't make me feel trapped. It didn't make me feel claustrophobic. It gave me hope. It gave me a sense of community. It gave me a sense of freedom, and it gave me a sense of peace of mind, because similar to what you shared, you know, with my story as well, it's like, I thought there was something seriously wrong with me. I had known at this point in time that I had OCD. I had been seeing a therapist, you know, I had already this awareness, but I didn't think it was even possible to have a relationship obsessive compulsive disorder. I was like, how is that even a subset? So once I was ruminating and Googling in a similar way, and just for me, it was like, I was all the questions that I was having in my head, I was Googling and then reading articles.
Yeah.
Some of them were helpful and some of them made it worse, but a lot of the time it was like, I'm having doubts. Is this normal? What is the signs of a perfect relationship? I, you know, wasn't feeling that like giddy feeling today. Is there something wrong? Is, you know, and all those questions that I was having, I was Googling everything, and then came across articles about like relationship OCD. And I was like, whoa. So it really was, it was this sense of like labeling in a very empowered way that gave me hope and helped me learn more about it. And that was really like what got me started in, and this all happened, by the way, this year. Like, I've known about my OCD for years, my scrupulosity, my emetophobia, you know, for my listeners and my fellow tweeters, like they're aware of like the emetophobia, scrupulosity, but like the OCD, that's a new thing. I just recently started discovering about myself, and it was a little scary, because I was like, great, you know, here's something else. But in a way, it was empowering to kind of piece everything together and see the bigger picture.
Yeah. And I think that there's a lot of science too in regards to labeling, because a lot of times in society we talk about, oh, don't put labels on people, you know, that's uncomfortable, that makes me feel in prison. But in actuality, especially with mental health and especially with people who have gone through trauma, labeling actually brings down the nervous system. When we can label something and say, I'm experiencing this, or this is what's going on, or even saying, I'm experiencing fear, like naming it out loud and labeling it, it actually calms down the nervous system. So it's scientifically doing something as well. So when people who are experiencing RCD, you know, right before they come across these articles or, you know, diagnosis, they are going through so much uncertainty, right? And it's really hard. Uncertainty is really hard for a mind that wants to have certainty, the black and white thinking. So in actuality, that labeling does really help, especially in the beginning. And then the transformation actually starts where we take that labeling, we go through the exercises, and then we start to almost let go of the label. And that's kind of like a journey within itself, which is another empowering journey. It's like the empowerment of labeling and the empowerment of being like, ooh, I am not my label anymore. So it's a whole journey with that. But scientifically, it makes complete sense too in regards to why it brings us so much peace and relief.
Definitely. Yeah. Oh, that's so beautiful. I love that. And so with the Googling, and especially just as I'm recalling having these questions and these doubts and going on Google and experiencing the utmost of panic when you are uncertain about your relationship, how can someone tell whether it's ROCD or if the person just isn't the right match to be in a relationship with?
So I first want to say that this is one of the most commonly asked questions in regards to RRCD. And it's a valid question, right? Like, it's an actually important question to know. But the other thing is that most people with RRCD do take it and become very obsessive compulsive about it. You know, you can use this specific question and go, but how do I know? But how do I really know? How can I gain that certainty? How can I gain that 100% sense of I'm okay and I'm safe, right? So it can definitely become obsessive compulsive. So I'm just going to put that on the side for, you know, just knowledge for listeners that it is, you know, one of the most commonly asked questions with RRCD. Mm-hmm. But on a side note, just in like a diagnostic note, even though I'm not able to diagnose, typically, and this goes for RRCD, this goes for OCD, there is definitely that anxiety that comes with it. And I do want to also add that anxiety doesn't have to look like the typical form of anxiety. You know, like a lot of people think, okay, anxiety, like I'm pacing around the room, I'm sweating, I'm panicking, I can't breathe, I'm passing out. There are so many different symptoms, and every individual is different with someone who experiences anxiety. Someone who experiences anxiety might feel really calm in their body, but their mind is full of rumination. Someone with anxiety might be having a lot of trouble sleeping, and at night they're having images and intrusive thoughts, right? But they feel calm. But typically, a person will know if they're experiencing RRCD and OCD when they do experience anxiety, when there's some sort of compulsion. Compulsions can be in sense of checking or, you know, comparing our relationship to other people, avoiding, but they can also be ruminations. Ruminations can also be compulsions as well. So there's the anxiety, the compulsions, and the ruminations and the obsessions, and also the state of urgency. The state of urgency is a really big one. Like in a state where, you know, let's say you have an intrusive thought that comes up or a thought that comes up that says, oh, like, I don't find my partner attractive. Okay. Person who doesn't experience RRCD will go, okay, my partner is not really attractive today, and then move on. Or they might be like, oh, so ugly, like whatever, I'll deal with it later. Or, you know, they might be like, that's a weird thought, but then they move on. Person with RRCD will typically go, oh my God, why do I have this thought? And then they'll go down that spiraling route and start obsessing and probably go into compulsion to try to relieve the anxiety. But there's the state of urgency. And the state of urgency is what feeds the compulsions, is what feeds the cycle. So if you experience those things, especially with RRCD, you know, the anxiety, the ruminations about your relationship and yourself and how you feel about your partner, the compulsions and the state of urgency, that's typically how an individual knows that they're experiencing RRCD or not.
And that really resonates with me because I am one of those sufferers who does get that I'm sweating, my heart is racing, like I'm actually very consciously aware of how my body reacts when I'm going into that mindset. And so what I've noticed in the past and just, you know, like my current boyfriend, we've been together for a year and a half and he's my first like official relationship. I have never been in a relationship before. So a lot of the times it was this idea of like, well, I don't even have another relationship to think about. I don't have the experience. I'm 28. I, you know, was going through high school and college, just very much obsessing over my grades. And those are all things that have to deal with like childhood traumas and trying to please my mom. And, you know, that's another conversation for another topic, but how it all relates to the anxiety that I feel now with RRCD and being able to distinguish, at least I'm aware that what I'm experiencing is RRCD. And again, hopefully this is helpful for listeners, but what I've noticed is that with previous attempts of relationships, you know, people that I've dated before meeting my boyfriend, there was a sense of like internal discomfort where my head was kind of in this la-la land, fantasizing about this idea of the person, but internally, it didn't feel quite right because we didn't have similar interests or we didn't, you know, see ourselves on the same paths about things. So there were like very obvious things. And instead of feeling ROCD where I was like constantly questioning the relationship, it was more so feeling spiteful, feeling angry, feeling sad, like all the things that I was experiencing when I was having like problems with my mom, like the mommy daughter relationship that I have that's been complicated for years. But there was this sense of like, I want to put up a wall and shield my emotions because this person, it was almost as if like my my intuition was like, and I know that that can be a triggering word because sometimes that word intuition like triggers me too, but there was this sense of like, I know that this person isn't the right person because there are so many things that are just not aligning, conversations, things that we enjoy doing, like all of that. And it was my head that was kind of like, oh no, this is great. Like you could totally see yourself with this person. So now with my boyfriend, it's been like the reverse for the first time ever. It's like now my head is overanalyzing, overthinking, questioning everything, experiencing all four of those things that you mentioned. But my gut is like, you love him. He loves you. You guys have similar goals, similar interests. You want the same things in life. I just moved in with him in, you know, the beginning of August. So it's, there are things that I'm seeing are different than other attempts. It's just that when I first started having these thoughts, because they weren't present at like the beginning of the relationship, it almost started happening like after the 4 to 5 month mark, where I was experiencing anxiety in other areas of my life. And that in turn made me feel this lack of control. And the only thing that I must have, I guess at that point in time, associated like my lack of control with was like, well, what, you know, is there something wrong with my relationship? And it wasn't until, again, like beginning of this year, so we had already been together for like 6 months, where the compulsion started. So it is kind of crazy to see the difference between previous attempts and this relationship. And I can agree and say that as someone who like is currently suffering and is currently still in recovery, that these things do give me confirmation that I'm experiencing RSCD rather than it being about the person. So thank you for sharing that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's so good that you also have that sense of awareness in regards to that, right? Like one thing that we really bring up with Awaken Into Love and the RSCD work is the first key is just the awareness mm-hmm. piece, which is a lot more powerful than people think, just having awareness of the patterns. And the other thing that I want to add with people who are curious about, you know, whether they have RSCD or not, is what we say is look at the patterns. Look at the patterns of what's happening, right? Is this a pattern? How many times has this happened? And this is interesting because my husband used to say this to me all the time, where we've done so much work around this, you know, where we've even, you know, talked about like what had worked and what had didn't work. And a lot of the times he was feeding into my compulsions. But at the end of the at the end of kind of the healing process with RSCD, he would start saying, you know, he would say, I'm not going to go into this, but hey, I'm just going to point out this is a pattern. This is a pattern, right? Like we've been here before. Remember, we've been here before. This is the pattern. And so when we can kind of bring it into like, oh, this is a pattern of mine. Oh, I've been here before. Then that can also be really helpful in terms of like, because we can kind of go into, well, maybe this is like a different thing that I'm obsessing about, where, you know, recognize your patterns for the people who are listening. Recognize how many times you've been here in this specific pattern. And, you know, trying to bring awareness on that is key. But at the end of the day, it's exactly what you are saying. Awareness is so much more important than we think. And if we can just start there, then we're on a good path. We're on a really good path.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. And now I used that word trigger when I was sharing my story about whether it's RSCD versus, you know, is it the right person? So what were some of your triggers, and do you still get triggered now?
I had to even think about this because I will say that I was triggered by everything, and I know that that's such a boring answer. But when your anxiety is at such a heightened state, and you're just full of just being on alert constantly, your fight or flight system is constantly on guard, anything can be a trigger. Mm-hmm. And for some people, there are specific triggers, right? For some people, they were constantly hyper-focused on their partner's attractiveness. For other people, it might be their intelligence of their partner. For other people, it might be, you know, in regards to a value compatibility or something else. But when you're really, really intensely in anxiety, anything can really be a trigger. It's really anything that the mind can do to get you to not be in a relationship, to keep you protected. That's its job. It's just trying to protect you. like an overprotective parent that's like actually harming you instead, when you think, when the parent thinks it's doing the right thing when it's not.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really about that learning process. But if I can think about it, my triggers were anything, you know, the way he would talk, the way he would eat, the way he would walk, the way he would say something, the way he looks, you know, anything, his attractiveness, you know, it could really be in regards to absolutely anything.
And that is very powerful to hear. And I can relate, because again, in a way where I was experiencing so much anxiety in all of these other categories, there were certain things that were very much triggering me as well. There has been something like a theme, a pattern for me, where I would be obsessing over signs and over like if-then statements. So I would literally say to myself, you know, if it rains today, we're meant to be. Like if it's, you know, if I hear a siren, I mean, this is like over dramatized. Like, you know, I was picking things that were a little bit more like relating to the issue or something, but that it's almost as if my brain was speaking to ask a question that then would like make the anxiety worse, because it was trying to protect me. And what I'm learning too is that it was trying to keep me in this state of like normal that it thought was normal. Even though normal was harming me, it was trying to keep me in a state of panic, because that was what it was used to. And so I would catch myself doing a lot of if-then statements, you know, if it's raining, if I hear a siren, we're meant to be, or if this happens, then we're not meant to be. Yeah. And if the thing happened when I said like, oh, if this happens, we're not meant to be together, and that thing happened, I would freak out. I would obsess over it for hours, sometimes days, sometimes weeks, and just be like, oh my God, well then that's it, you know? And then this, again, this wall would kind of come up of like trying to protect my emotions, trying to protect my feelings. And to your point, it's like, it's almost like the RSVD kind of pushes away the person, not because of them, who they are, but because it's easier to be single. It's easier, like to not have someone else controlling your emotions or making you feel a type of way. Like, oh, if I'm single, I'll be better off because then I won't be sad and I won't be feeling this way. But it's a cycle. And I like fully am aware that this would be a pattern no matter who I would be with, you know? And it's like finding someone who I do see in my future, who I do love unconditionally, who I do want to be with and want to start a future with. It's like I've needed to really get deep inside of myself and say, okay, I'm recognizing that these are triggers. I'm recognizing that these are patterns, but because this person is worth it to me, I know that I need to do something because this is all in my head. And that's taken me a long time to realize, but like my triggers were less about like, or are less about like the physical, although I have seen, you know, I've been reading things about how that can be something. For me, I'm such a feelings person. I'm very emotional. I have a lot of feelings. If I am like stressed about something else and I'm not thinking about him, or I'm caught up in my work and I realize 2 hours have gone by and I haven't thought about him, I'm like, is that a bad sign? Does that mean I don't love him? Does that mean I'm not thinking about him? Oh my God. Oh my God. And then it spirals.
Yeah.
So, you know, another thing too is questioning whether or not you're thinking about someone else or an ex. So is it normal to think about leaving your partner, questioning your love for your partner, and or like thinking about people such as an ex? How did that play into RFCD?
Yeah. So I actually was going to go into this myself because of a couple things that you said. First, in regards to everything that you just said, you know, those are the one thing that you brought up, which is so very common, especially with people who are very somatic based like you, like saying like the whole feelings thing. I'm very somatic based as well. So I would say that a lot of my triggers were also feeling based, right? In a sense of like, how am I feeling now? How is this? The whole science thing is actually, it's a cognitive distortion. It's based in cognitive behavioral therapy. The whole science is actually magical thinking. If I turn off this light and it doesn't turn on, then we're not meant to be, right? Or like if I see like an angel sign or something like that, then we're not meant to be. And it's very, very based in first black or white thinking. And it's also magical thinking and cognitive distortions, which is very common with OCD in general, aside from RCD. So one thing that I kind of want to bring back to, which was your question, was when a lot of people are actually focused on the feelings or like, do I miss my partner, or I should miss my partner enough, or how do I feel about my partner when they're close to me? And it's very like romance based in a sense where there's like an idea of how a relationship should look. Then a lot of times what we do with Awaken Into Love, and this is actually in like how, what we talk about a lot, is we believe that there are probably some beliefs that are actually not serving you in terms of what you think love should look like. So we talk a lot about the Honeywood idea of love, which you've probably heard of, which is a combination of the honeymoon phase and the Hollywood phase of Hollywood movies, and how we've been programmed in a lot of ways for a couple of reasons to think that love should be a certain way, whether love should feel all feelings all the time, we should miss our partner all the time, we should feel attracted to our partner all the time, and all these type of things. So that's a little bit of a separate conversation, but I brought that up specifically because the thing about love is that it's actually extremely normal to have thoughts about your ex, to have thoughts about another person, to find that another person is attractive, to even fantasize about another person, to even be like, ooh, maybe that person's better for me, or to think, oh, why did I choose my partner? It's actually very, very normal and healthy to not have 100% certainty. The thing about ROCD is that they take those certain situations and they feel as though that thought is a threat to the relationship, and they start obsessing. That's the difference between someone with ROCD and someone with not. When in reality, all of these doubts are normal. They're actually healthy. But the point where it gets unhealthy and the point where it gets dysfunctional is when it starts going into ROCD and a person becomes obsessive compulsive and they start suffering and, you know, everything else kind of spins out of control.
That is very interesting, and I just learned something new then, because I was not aware or educated about magical thinking, and truly I brought these things up with my therapist about the if-then statements in my recent session, and the reason why it happened was because my boyfriend and I went to a Yankee game, and one of the players had a name of someone I used to date, and that name like just triggers me, because it gets the ROCD, like, oh my God, don't think about him. But then I think back to my scrupulosity, where I was obsessed with religion, and in my family, we were not allowed to use the word hell or Satan, because it was going to stir things and the devil was going to possess you. And so I was constantly living in this state of fear and shame and guilt. Those three things have been like the pillar that basically, you know, took over my entire life and just made me think the way that I think now. And it was in that moment where I haven't had one of those if-then statements in years, but it brought me back to how many times I used to do this with everything else. So in a way, I'm glad it happened, because in that moment, it helped me remember that that's something that I struggled with. And so if these are things that our listeners are struggling with, again, like, I hope that they're learning something new too, because I didn't even know about this until just now. And also, you know, I proved myself wrong. And I told my therapist this too. After I had this thought, I was like, you know, if this guy with this name, you know, gets a home run, then that person is like the person. And then he got the home run. I was like, great, here we go. Like, ruminating, you know, compulsion, it started spiraling. And I challenged myself and I was like, okay, if they get another, you know, point while we're here at the game, then my boyfriend and I are getting married. And they got another point. And they won the whole game. You know, like, they got like many more points. So I literally proved my thoughts were false. And in that same window of time, I was like, wow, I'm really grateful that I had this experience, because it reminded me of things that I hopefully can help bring light on and learn more about. And oh yeah, I forgot I used to do that. And then, oh wait, I literally just challenged my own views and proved myself wrong. Yeah. And that was really powerful. It doesn't always happen, but that was something that like really struck me that day. And I mean, but I think that that's another, like, that was a really big trigger for me too, was just thinking about someone like, oh, could they have been, could they have been, when you consciously know, absolutely not. Like, there is a reason why doors close and people are not together, but it confuses you. And again, when you're already heightened in your sense of panic, it's it's so easy to go into compulsions and start ruminating because it is a stress-based, fear-based thought.
Yeah. And I think the other thing too in regards to that is that ultimately it comes down to the feeling of needing control and needing certainty, right? Because it's more of a sense of if this person did this or if this happens externally, which is a feeling that takes away our power, then that means X, Y, Z. Okay, so in regards to what we were speaking about just with signs and everything like that, the thing about signs and the thing about magical thinking is that any type of cognitive distortion is basically our way to find some sort of certainty. So we actually go over this a lot in the course in Awaken Into Love, basic cognitive behavioral work, but there's definitely the black or white thinking, which is like, I love them, I don't, I have to leave, I don't. There's catastrophizing, which is like, if this happens, then, you know, if they're not attractive, then that means I have to leave. There's the magical thinking, which is like, okay, if this number pops up, that means I have to leave. Or if I have this type of sign, then I have to leave. Magical thinking can be really hard for people who are practicing spirituality. There can be a fine line because I myself definitely consider myself practicing spirituality for many, many years. So that was a really, really hard thing for me. And this is another topic with the idea of, you know, spirituality in RCD is a really interesting topic too. But going back to what we were talking about in regards to the cognitive distortions and, you know, signs and stuff, the reason as to why the brain does it is because it gives the brain a sense of control and it gives the brain a sense of certainty. If this number pops up for me and if this person says this, then that means that I have to leave my partner, then at least I have a sense of urgency. I have a sense of control and at least I have some sense of certainty. That's basically what the brain is craving. Mm. When we're in a state of anxiety, what we want is we want to know if the tiger is there or not. That's the basis of science, right? Like, is the tiger behind the door or is the tiger like outside somewhere else? Like, our nervous system is on fight or flight. So the whole science thing is really just the brain's way to be like, if this happens, then I have certainty, then I know, then the brain, the nervous system relaxes. But the more we do that, the more we train the brain to go, okay, this is my way to seek relief. And that's where the compulsive behavior starts because the brain's like, oh, that gives me pleasure. That gives me comfort. I'm going to keep doing what gives me pleasure and comfort. And then that's where it feeds the OCD.
Right. That is so interesting. And again, as someone who has suffered immensely from religious beliefs and the idea of praying the perfect way and believing things in a certain way, and it was more traumatizing and did more harm than it did good. And that took me years to work on, took me years of shifting my mindset. And I guess I didn't realize that even something like that has a tie back to what my original programming was. And to see it in this way is so amazing. I already feel lighter because it does, again, it further explains how my brain processes information, tries to make sense out of things, and tries to help me in the best of its ability. You know, like, again, like as we said before, it's thinking that it's helping me. And I definitely want to challenge myself to start, you know, trying to thank my brain. Like, this could be like a mindset shifting exercise of just trying to thank myself every time I have these thoughts. Yeah. Because instead of trying to fight it, because the more that I fight it, and I know many people can relate to this, the more you try to fight it, the worse it gets because you're just adding fuel to that fire. And I mentioned that in like a previous podcast episode about this visual of like sitting at a campfire and like the more that you ruminate and have these needs of feeling certainty, it's like you're throwing more logs and matches into the fire and it's just going to get bigger and bigger and bigger, catch on other things. And then you'll never be able to go inside and go to bed. You just have to keep tending to the fire. And that is how it feels. And just, you know, with the people that I've been talking to on Twitter and connecting with on Reddit, I can sense their sense of urgency just in the way that they message. They can literally send me like these vibrations of anxiety that like you, it's almost like your brain goes blank and you are on autopilot and you don't even realize that you're caught up and like you like black out and you start saying things that you almost don't even remember. Cause I know that that's how I feel when I start getting into that mindset as well. So, and it's scary because again, like it's, for those that do experience the bodily symptoms of like heart racing, dry throat, sweat, you know, like palms sweating, it's shaking. Like there are different sensations that the body goes through that is just so, so discomforting. And yeah. You don't want other people around you to know. And I think that one other thing that I also wanted to just touch on is talking to friends about ROCD also fuels it in ways that are very detrimental, because in the experience of like, oh my gosh, this name popped up, it reminded me of my ex and I was thinking about my ex and, you know, all these thoughts came back as I was having conversation with a good friend. She was like, ooh, that's not a good sign. You're going to need to figure that out before you guys move in. You're going to need, and I was like, no, but you don't get it. I know I love my boyfriend. I know that I want to be with him. There's not a shadow of doubt. Like, I know he's the one. And she's like, but you're contradicting yourself because you just had doubt. And it was like, that was making it even harder, because I know she meant well, because to your point, when people who do not suffer from OCD have a thought, they think it and let it pass. But those who do suffer, obviously myself included, it's like we have thoughts and then we think, oh my God, the world is ending. I'm having this thought for a reason and it's a bad reason and I have to do something about it. And if she is able to consciously, you know, because she's like, yeah, you know, I've thought about my ex before too, but like, who cares? And I'm like, wow, you know, like I've had moments of like envy for people who can experience thoughts about things that seemingly are not harmful, but I take them as harmful and just like let them go. But it's very challenging to let those thoughts go, especially when you're at its peak.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I think that there's something in regards to the comfort sometimes of another person speaking to someone who doesn't have ROCD when they say, yeah, I've had thoughts when my partner's unattractive, or yeah, I've had thoughts where, you know, I thought about my ex. That can actually be sometimes, you know, be comforting in some ways, because it can actually make us feel as though we're not alone, which can help the shame and guilt. But then at the same time, there's that other side where it's so important for people with ROCD to be careful who they talk to in regards yes. to ROCD. And that's something I invite all of you listening to be picky. You can be picky. And this work with Awaken Into Love and all that we do, it's not just about ROCD and getting through ROCD. Like, that's just kind of like a side thing. We believe in the whole idea of wholeness transformation. Like, this is an opportunity to go, okay, wow, I really want to talk to this person about it because they are probably upset that they don't know about my life. When in reality, how can I give myself more love and compassion and work on myself? How can I give myself more empowerment in this moment with ROCD in order to retrain my brain so I can give myself more love, so I don't have to tell them about it, right? Like, Awaken Into Love is really about awakening into love within the relationship, to become awakened into love with ourselves, to become whole within us, to remind ourselves of our wholeness. And it's that continual journey. But for many listeners who are listening, be picky. You have all the right to be picky with who you talk to in regards to ROCD and about mental health, because some people won't understand. And many people are just going to try to give you advice and try to fix you. ROCD people don't need that. They don't need that at all. They need something that's a lot more different, and friends will and family members will typically try to fix it. So be picky, everyone.
I second that. And I think that's so beautiful. And thank you for sharing that, because that is there. Again, there is so much truth and power in that. And even for my personal journey in trying to find a therapist, when I was looking for a therapist, I was extremely picky choosy. I wanted, you know, a female, because I'm female and I felt like I would be more comfortable. And again, nothing to do with labels, but it's just, you know, this an energy presence that I felt I could connect with. I needed the person to be within a certain age range that's close to mine so that she could relate to me. I wanted the person to be a specialist in mental health. And above everything, I needed the therapist to be specialized in OCD patients specifically. And I've seen, even just again in the transformations from the sessions that I've had with her, what she shares with me is that if, for example, someone suffered from alcoholism and, you know, they were in recovery, she like shared with me that, you know, it's oftentimes challenging for someone to go see someone who didn't experience the same things that they experienced, because it's harder to relate to those people. And one thing that was actually very like comforting, empowering, she's like, you know, for you to be on Twitter and doing a podcast about mental health and about OCD specifically and all the subsets that you've personally dealt with, you are now turning into that person that can relate to them at eye level because you know what it feels like. Again, from a feelings person to another feelings person, it is comforting. And I really love that Awaken Into Love has this incredible community where it helps people feel like they're not alone as well. And that's why these podcasts, these courses, having people like you on this planet is just such a blessing, because it does help to give people this friend to friend mentorship and like handholding, because again, we all understand what we're going through. There's no judgment. There's no, I love that you use the word like fixing, because I think that the friends that I've spoken to who do not have ROCD, who do not have OCD, they have my best interest at heart. They want me to be happy. And they're like, well, if you're feeling this discomfort, like there must be a reason. So like, you know, they're trying to give me advice that they think is best suited for me. And it's just, you know, like they don't even know that they're harming my thoughts. So I have been very picky choosy with who I'm speaking to. And now, you know, I've actually just only been talking with people on Twitter and my therapist about it. And I think just as like an add-on question, if I may, what would you encourage, or what is your opinion on like sharing these thoughts with your partner? Because I think that that's something else that I'm currently struggling with, is that my boyfriend knows about, you know, like the harm OCD that I've experienced, the emetophobia, the scrupulosity. He's aware of all of these things. And when I was having, you know, just intrusive thoughts about that guy that I, you know, tried dating like 6 years ago, which again, like it's not him, it's just like the thoughts that I had. I was honest with him about it. And this was like several months ago. And thankfully he was so supportive and was like, you know, do you like him? No. Did you text him? No. Are you thinking about him now? No. So like, what was it? I was like, I don't know. I just thought about him. And I just felt like I felt compelled to just tell you what was on my mind, because I'm very open with communicating my feelings. And I just wanted him to be aware of it. I have not, however, like fully told him about like ROCD specifically, with all the questions that I've had in my head that have led me to learn that I have it. So do you feel that it is helpful to share it? If so, how, like, how does someone kind of, you know, because I wouldn't want my boyfriend to think that this is about him, because it's not, you know, like this is not about him. I love him dearly. I see him in my future and I don't want him to get worried. I don't think he would be, but there's still like guilt and shame and fear around even sharing it.
Yeah. Yeah. This is such a good question. It's so important. Actually, just like on a side note, super excited about this topic, because Alexis and I are actually releasing a partner's course in like a couple weeks, specifically for partner. And I say that partners need support. Like, we really think of it similarly, like someone who is like an alcoholic. There's meetings and group and therapy for people who are alcoholics. And then there's like Al-Anon, right? Like the Al-Ateen, like specifically support groups for people who are partners. Mm. And I'm not saying that in terms of like extremity or anything like that, but what I'm saying is that support for partners, we feel, is so crucial and so important. So the other thing that I really want to bring up is that I had, when I had a severe ROCD and ROCD, I really dabbled with this so much with my husband. I feel like he was kind of like this practice of like, does this work? Is this working? You know, in terms of how much can I share here? How much should I share here? We've done like trial and error so many times on what works and what doesn't. And I do want to say too, for a lot of listeners right now, you know, if your partner doesn't know about ROCD, that's okay. Because a lot of people get triggered and they're like, should I tell my partner? But I don't want to tell my partner, but should I? And we can kind of get into that back and forth. If you do tell your partner about ROCD, that's okay. It's mainly on how you're communicating with your partner. The thing that happened specifically with me that I didn't even realize until later on was that I was actually using my husband as a compulsion. 100%. It was actually making my ROCD worse. I told him every thought. I told him every sensation. I told him what I was experiencing. And what happened is that, and this is very normal for relationships, is you have a situation and of course your partner wants to fix it. Your partner is like, my partner's suffering, I'm going to do anything I can. And sometimes the partner can try to become like a therapist, or they can kind of try to become the best friend that's going to be there for them no matter what, without putting down their boundaries. So what can happen a lot is that the person with ROCD can actually compulsively tell their partner what's going on as a way of feeding into a compulsion, which makes the ROCD worse. So yeah, we talked about different types of techniques where you don't necessarily speak about your thoughts, but explain to your partner more on a somatic way. And we actually call this the hold and reflect technique in Awaken Into Love, where the partner next to you, and instead of telling your partner, hey, I'm thinking like about my ex, I'm thinking that you're not attractive enough, instead of telling your partner your obsessive thoughts, you're actually going into your body, into a somatic state, and saying, hey partner, I'm experiencing RCD, I'm experiencing sadness, I'm experiencing fear. But you never go into the thoughts. And what the partner does is the partner holds and reflects that specific experience, and they say, it's okay to feel that way because it's basic mirroring and relationships. I see you. I know this is so hard and I'm here for you. But you never feed into the obsessive thoughts and then you never talk about it. That's the difference. And, you know, in the beginning, sometimes a partner may be curious about RCD and you can explain it to them, but there's a difference between someone feeling a state of urgency and kind of like vomiting all on their partner and saying, hey, this is what I'm experiencing. Fix me, fix me, fix me. The partner mirrors that and goes, I'll fix you, I'll fix you, I'll fix you. And then the OCD cycle continues.
Wow.
So we really, really, really need to be careful in terms of how our partner's supporting us. Are they putting their boundaries up? Are we putting our boundaries in? You know, that type of communication work. How is our partner feeling in terms of them trying to fix you and like knowing they can't fix you, and then taking responsibility for yourself? Because in many ways, it actually prevents a person from doing the work.
Wow.
That was a lot, but
I'm like sitting here like processing and like digesting that, because you know, I was having a conversation with my cousin as I was experiencing this compulsion like months and months ago. And she was like, there is something wrong with you. Why do you have to like tell him everything that's going on in your head? There are things that you can keep from him. There are things that like, why do you feel the need to tell him everything? Why do you? And then because she's my cousin, she knows the relationship I have with my mom. She's like, you're doing the same thing like what you did with your mom. You have to compulsively tell your mother what you were thinking, what you were experiencing. And my mom, again, I'm not blaming her, but she was using that as almost like leverage to try to keep me safe.
Yeah.
By like, she was using my thoughts as a way to, you know, control me and my outcomes to keep me safe. So she was doing the like, hell, you know, like what my brain does, like trying to protect me, but really it was causing me more harm because it was making me feel debilitated. And I felt like I wasn't able to make decisions on my own, to process things on my own. And so I constantly felt this need that I needed to tell her everything. So I learned that behavior that I need to like compulsively tell people every thought that I have. I'm one of those people too, that like, I can't lie. If I arrive somewhere at, you know, 9:35 and I write down 9:30, I have to be like, no, it was 9:35. You know, so these are like obsessions where it's like the need, you know, like almost fearing that you're going to lie about something, or you're going to keep something from someone, because my mom, again, like there was this programming, like don't hide things because, you know, I can help you. Don't, you know, but she used to also tell me like, don't tell your friends things. They, you know, don't come to mommy, come to mommy. And I almost took the opposite. Very early on, I would overshare my feelings the same way that I would overshare with her.
Yeah.
But that quickly became a part of my relationship where I felt these compulsions to tell him everything, every single thought. And I dropped that bomb on him. Like we were on our, you know, going to bed, it was late. And I was like, I was thinking about someone and I'm so sorry. I feel like a horrible girlfriend. Yeah. And I literally cried. And he was like, it's okay. Like, it was a thought. That's it. You know, and because he's able to process thoughts as just thoughts, you know, he knew, he knows my heart. He knows that I love him. And so, but I felt so horrible and guilty and was like, and the more I tried to push those away, it was almost making it worse because I was making myself feel more guilty. And it just, that's how the spiral, like it gets, it goes and goes and goes. So
Exactly. And the beautiful thing that you brought up too, which is a huge fueling source of our OCD that many people might not know, is shame and guilt. Those are the two things that really fuel it. And those are opportunities that we really believe where you can use the guilt and shame to actually do inner work within yourself, right? Because we compulsively tell someone or our partner what's going on because it temporarily relieves us from our shame and guilt. It temporarily relieves that we get a temporary high in a sense where we're like, oh, they accept me. We're really just creating this sense of mirroring, which is why hold and reflect is so important. We're really just wanting to be seen and for someone to say, it's okay, I see you. You're worthy. You're lovable, even in this darkness, even in the shadows, right? That's what we're craving, but we cannot go into that relief and freedom from our mind. It has to be a somatic experience. It has to be through an emotion base. It cannot be healed through our obsessive thoughts because our obsessive thoughts are just our escaping mechanism. And we can't use our escaping mechanism in order to heal. We have to attach the root.
Wow. Yeah, that's really powerful. And what one thing specifically that you just said, like, really resonated with me. And I just want to, like, I just need to say this too. I definitely felt unlovable when I was realizing that I had obsessive compulsive thoughts and intrusive thoughts. I hated that side of me. I didn't want to accept that side of me. And I felt unlovable and I felt unworthy and still do sometimes. Again, I am still in my recovery and there are still moments where I'm like, how can someone like me even be in a relationship? I still have so many problems and so many things I need to work on. How can I be lovable in a relationship if I'm having these thoughts or having these experiences? And there is this sense of like, am I even worthy? Because especially, and I connected with someone on Reddit about this and we really bonded, but it's like when we find partners who we do know are people that we love unconditionally, see a future with and want to be with, and the ROCD makes us have all these doubts and questions and, you know, gets us to that point. There are doubts of like, am I worthy of someone this incredible? And we almost put them on this pedestal, and not always in like an unhealthy way, but it's like, wow, I do feel so blessed to have a man like this or a woman like this in my life who means this much to me. Am I worthy? Can I be a lovable partner if I'm experiencing these things and going through these things? And that is something that, again, I'm actively working on giving myself the love and telling myself that I'm worthy. It's going to take some time to start believing it. But I think that trust is a really big word too, that combats fear and guilt and shame. And when I start to trust myself more that I do deserve love, that I am worthy of love, it also relieves the pressure of obsessing over things and going into compulsion.
Yeah. And you're definitely working with some, like, the whole core of like, am I worthy, am I lovable, really comes from like the mirroring we a lot of the times did not get as children from our parents, right? Like,
yes, 100%.
Am I still worthy if I make this mistake? Am I still worthy, mom, dad, if I do this? Or am I still, do you still love me, right? And what we do is we take that sense of when we were young, that feeling of unworthiness, that mirroring we didn't get, which is again why hold and reflect is so important, because we can use our relationship as a means to actually heal those attachment wounds and the trauma if we didn't get that from our parents. But we take that idea of, am I worthy? Am I lovable? Like, do you love me if I do this? And we put it onto our partner, right? Because our partner and our reptilian brain is basically like our parent. Like, you represent my father. Like, the unconscious doesn't sometimes know that. So there's a lot of that stuff going on, but really the idea of, am I worthy? Am I lovable? It actually doesn't come from us. It comes from our part of ourselves that had gone through trauma. And trauma can sometimes, we talk if this is another subject, can sometimes people think, oh my God, it has to be like a severe, like intense trauma. But trauma, what Alexi says a lot, is a time when our nervous system went through a shock, when we weren't seen, when we weren't mirrored, which is why we believe ROCD is such important work, because a lot of times people who have ROCD have relational trauma in some way, and it's just kind of being put on their partner. But the unworthiness and the love, and I think that sometimes I question this when I write my stories on Instagram too. A lot of times in my Instagram stories, I say, you are worthy. worthy or lovable. And sometimes we're like, why is she saying that? I'm not worthy. I'm not lovable. The reason why I'm saying that is because I'm attacking the core root of the reason as to why the obsessive compulsive thoughts are fueling. And if we can use OCD as a means to awaken into the love that we need for ourselves, if we can actually use these obsessive compulsive tendencies and these ruminations and our compulsions and actually bring it back to our own wholeness and worthiness, then we're actually healing ourselves, future generations to come, and also our partner as well. So it's an incredible transformative tool if we can look at it that way. But it really does come down to the root of, am I worthy? Am I still lovable, even if I'm this way, even if I'm in my shadow, even if I'm in my darkness? Will you still stay? Will you still love me?
Wow. Goosebumps. I am like, wow, this was incredibly powerful. And that, you know, even just how you call your program and what you're doing, Awaken Into Love, like, I feel like there is an awakening. Like, that's such a powerful word, awakening. And and really, it's like, you know, as we come to our you know, our closing, which this has been like incredible. And I'm like, oh my God, I want to keep talking. This is amazing. But, you know, we've kind of touched on it a little bit about, you know, how our listeners can find relief and what they can begin to do in their healing process. Definitely, again, going to these core things. And I'm so glad that we touched upon that about, you know, love and worthiness and finding those roots that, again, could have been from a parent or someone, you know, definitely from childhood, but trying to identify where that trauma started. Are there other things that you would like to add, or any other like kind of closing thoughts for our listeners?
Like, in regards to how that they can seek support, how they can seek help,
find relief, begin their healing. Of course, you know, I want to share, as you know, Kiyomina has been talking about throughout this podcast, that she has a course. You're able to find her on YouTube. She has amazing videos that she posts, and on her Instagram as well. So I want to just encourage everyone to go and follow her and look at her videos and just show her love and support and find love and support in yourself as well. So yes, around those things, you know, are there other things that you kind of want to mention? Or?
So I think the first thing is that for people who are looking for a therapist or for people who are looking for someone to work with, it's important to not focus on or find someone who just does talk therapy. That's not going to help. It can actually reinforce the obsessive thoughts. It can reinforce trauma. So it's important to find someone who has an understanding, and if you can, an OCD specialist, but an understanding in anxiety and obsessive compulsive behavior and any of those type of things. Trauma work can definitely help. EMDR can help in terms of like trauma-based things, but we definitely need to be addressing the anxiety. We need to be addressing the obsessive compulsive thoughts. So a lot of people don't also recognize that many therapists do consult. Like, you don't have to just like book a session, get in and just like try therapists out. I invite everyone, and this is my journey, to interview therapists, you know, call them and say, if you have this opportunity to call them and say, hey, I'm experiencing this right now. How can you help me? How are you going to be able to help me with this OCD? How are you going to be able to help me with this obsessive compulsive behavior? Because a lot of times, they will go to a therapist and they'll be like, just leave your partner, right? That's the last thing a person wants to hear. So that can be really helpful in a lot of ways too. The other thing is that, of course, there's like resources out there just in terms of like OCD books that can be really helpful. And then just obviously like knowing the work that we do, Alexis and I have the OCD 2.0 course, which specifically takes you through OCD. Finding freedom from OCD, based in cognitive behavioral work, exposure work, mindfulness work, and the WAKE technique that we have. That's, you know, the basis of kind of what I knew. And there's also amazing YouTube videos other than, you know, Awaken Into Love and stuff like that too.
Amazing. Oh, like I said, you are an angel. You are a light. I am so grateful for what you and Alexis are doing. Absolutely. This has been therapeutic. This has been awakening. This has been empowering. I am so excited to share this with everyone that I've been connecting with, because again, I have really been finding so much comfort in the online communities and just, you know, sharing my thoughts and, you know, experiences with people. And I know that this is going to be very helpful. So again, to our listeners, please be sure to check out the description section. I'm going to have a link to Kiyomi's YouTube, to her Instagram, and to her site so that you can go check it out. I know that you also have an OCD checklist by signing up to your newsletter. So that has been super helpful. So I want to encourage our listeners to do that as well. And thank you again, Kiyomi. This has been amazing.
Absolutely.
So grateful for
and
you.
And the other thing I just wanted to say, I completely forgot, is that Alexis is an ROCD specialist. She's actually a professional therapist. So for a lot of people who are like struggling to find specifically someone who works with ROCD, she is able to do that specific work. So, and she does free consults as well. And she is absolutely amazing. And, you know, our values and visions are the same. That's why we created the course. That's why we created Awaken Into Love. And yeah,
amazing.
We're so excited to do so much more with this. There's so much more to come. Everyone, just wait.
So excited. Yay. Thank you so much.
You.
Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to this week's episode. Be sure to hit that subscribe button and tune in next week for a new topic. To help spread the good vibes, please share this episode with friends and family, or if you share on social, be sure to tag me at Coach Lizzie.